Just a month ago, the New York Times printed an article updating the world on what has come to be known as the Great Pacific Garbage Patch. Have you heard about that? The Great Pacific Garbage Patch? It's estimated that 87,000 tons of plastic debris floats in this massive conglomerate of trash in the Pacific Ocean, somewhere between California and Hawaii. And researchers say it is a mass maybe 4 times the size of California. But it's not like you can measure it as if it's some island that you could walk across. Rather, it's a spread out collection of large and small debris, hardly visible if you were floating over top of it. It's where the trash goes to die, or not really die, because it takes a long time for these plastics to break down. But eventually, the ocean does break them into what they call microplastics that can be then consumed by sea turtles and fish, coming right back into our own food chain. That's a nice thought. But how does it all get there? Well, all kinds of reasons. Certainly tsunamis and floods and hurricanes, they don't help. But most certainly, neither does the rate by which we consume. Studies are showing that even as the rates of human consumption are rising steadily year after year, the ideal of the good life also remains out of reach. Consumption goes up, the good life is still out of reach. Will we ever be satisfied with our stuff? Well, folks, it's Earth Day. Earth Day falls on a Sunday this year. And as Christians, I believe it is our responsibility to care about these issues that relate to pollution and overconsumption. In 1970, organizers established April 22nd as Earth Day, a reminder to set one day aside to educating one another, the world, about the dangers of pollution and toxic emissions and overconsumption of non-renewable sources. But other than set aside a day, what have we really done about it? The Great Pacific Garbage Patch has grown exponentially since 1970. David Radcliffe, the founder of the New Community Project, reports that wildlife populations will be down by 2/3 from 1970 in the first Earth Day to just 2 years from now in 2020. 50 years, 2/3. So what are we really doing about it? Well, I'll admit it's very hard for me to imagine that my little choices affect what happens in this really big world. It's hard to imagine that I can make much of a difference at all, but as the Onceler once said in Dr. Seuss's classic, The Lorax, maybe some of you know this line, unless someone like you cares a whole awful lot, nothing's gonna get better. It's not. So then why shouldn't it be Christians who begin to care a whole awful lot? Our Bible is riddled with texts that support a strong stance for creation's health. And God believed this place was good, and he called it such, and he gave us dominion in Genesis 1. And it was not a dominion to overconsume and spoil this good earth, but it was one to keep it, tend it well. So this morning, our text comes from a book that I know some of you would prefer to gloss over, but not today. We go to Leviticus. Leviticus is one of those books, and I don't think we like it so much because it reads more like a textbook than a narrative, a good story. It's a book of law, and any good lawyer would come to know it very well. Nestled in this book of law is Leviticus 25, which explains the years of Sabbath and the year of Jubilee. Sabbath and Jubilee. Now, all of us know about the Sabbath day. It's that one of those Ten Commandments, remember, that we honor and keep the Sabbath day, a day of worship, our Sunday, a day of rest, family, prayer, worship. For 6 other days, you go and you work, but on Sunday, you give a rest to your soul to be renewed in the presence of God. That's the Sabbath day. But did you know that the law also prescribes for a Sabbath year? Every 7 years, according to Leviticus 25, there is to be a Sabbath year for the earth to rest, a year for the land not to be tilled and worked, a year for soil to rejuvenate and recover. And this is still a farming practice. Most of you know about that. Rotating crops, giving fields a rest, allow it to recoup. But this law made it so every field in the land of Israel sat while the people ate on the bountiful produce of the prior year. That's a Sabbath for the earth. Then, every 7 times 7 years, that's 49 years, and to make it a little easier, often they round it up to 50, there is to be a year of jubilee. A jubilee year. Not only does this year permit the land to rest, but it also resets the Israelite economy, returning all the lands to their original owners from the last jubilee, and returning all the people who have had to sell themselves into servitude and bondage, returns those slaves back to their own familial land, free again. That's the year of jubilee. And it's what Jesus declares when he announces his ministry in Luke chapter 4, the year of the Lord's favor. The oppressed, the bound go free. So my question is, why would these years of Sabbath and Jubilee be built into this Jewish law? Commentator Perry Yoder says that it's a reminder to the Israelites that they own nothing. They own nothing. The creation belongs to the Creator, to God. So they do not buy and sell their land. They do not buy and sell one another as slaves or servants, as if these were things that they could sell. The land and the people therein belong all to God. We merely tend. Yoder says that thus the Israelites don't buy land as much as they buy the crops that the land will produce until the next year of Jubilee, when everything is reset. We are the resident aliens in God's earth. There's nothing permanent to our nomadic sojourn on this land, but God's presence is eternal. This isn't the way we like to think about our property today. When we buy property, we think of it as our own, to do with as we please. We do not think of it as God's and us as just caretakers. To think of it this way means we are all just renters, and one day the property passes from us to another renter. But the owner remains forever God. When we think of ourselves as owners instead of renters, we think of our property as ours to use as we would have it, to maximize its yield. So who needs a Sabbath year then? Who wants a year when we can't make money and profit off of what we have? If there's a resource I can sell, I ought to. This is for my own profit. But that line of thinking means the earth never gets a rest. Do we let the earth rest? Or do we impose this relentless, profit-driven, goal-driven, ego-driven mindset on the earth? Unfortunately, it seems to me that the earth tends to take a back seat to our immediate perceived needs. And quite honestly, I think this has always been the case. I was shocked as I studied this collection of Sabbath and Jubilee laws this week in Leviticus when I learned that after these laws were cast, there is little evidence to show that the Israelites ever truly practiced them once they entered the Promised Land. Little evidence to show that they ever practiced the laws of Sabbath and Jubilee once they settled in and began to work the land. Sabbath years, Jubilee years, they go absent from the text, aside from the prophets hoping that one day the year of Jubilee would come when the prisoners and slaves would go free. But that's this future-oriented thing. And then, at the very end of the book of 2 Chronicles. The book ends with the Israelites' deportation to Babylon, the end of the monarchy as they knew it. And the chronicler writes in 2 Chronicles 36, 20 to 21, he says, "He took into exile, into Babylon, those who had escaped the sword, and they became servants to him and to his sons until the establishment of the kingdom of Persia, to fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had made up for its Sabbaths. All the days that it lay desolate, it kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. 70 years of missed Sabbaths." The Israelites sit in exile for these 70 years to make up for all those Sabbath years that they missed. That's the chronicler's rationale. So if the Sabbath year happens every 7 years and they sat in exile for 70 years, that means that they hadn't honored a Sabbath year in nearly 500 years. That means they hadn't had a Sabbath year, possibly from the deportation all the way back to the time of the judges when they were still attempting to occupy the land. They took the land as their own, considered it their own property, neglected to let it rest. Are we not guilty of the same sin? We hardly take a Sabbath day to allow our souls to rejuvenate, let alone a Sabbath year for the earth. So, my Christian friends, on this Earth Day, let's figure out how we can get these commitments to allow the earth to rest. There was a recent issue of Messenger Magazine, that's the Church of the Brethren magazine. If any of you are interested, we can talk about a subscription, they're cheap. A recent edition had articles about the Brethren tradition of simple living. And it asked questions like, how do we live simply in a modern context? Well, one of the suggestions remains very clear in my mind, and I'll issue it as a challenge to all of you. Take an economic Sabbath one day per week. An economic Sabbath where you do not buy anything, and you only consume that which you require, what you truly need. An economic Sabbath. And if you can't do a day per week, try a day per month. You see, most of us aren't farmers, so we can't let our fields rest, but we can let our overconsumption take a rest. We can let our drive to accumulate, our drive to be more than comfortable, we can let that rest. Our consumptions have an impact on the earth. You know that. And let's face it, this poor creation is long overdue for a rest from providing for us more than we ever needed. So give it a break. Take an economic Sabbath. And while you do this, make yourselves aware of your consumptions. Make yourselves aware of what you really need. And make yourself aware of all that the Creator has provided for you in His creation. Let the earth rest. Amen.